Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome to the Irish Farmers Journal Weekly Podcast.
Hello and welcome to this week's Irish Farmers Journal podcast. I'm Katrina Morrissey and I'm joined in studio today by political correspondent Pat O'Toole, schemes editor Darren Carty and our sustainability specialist Siobhan Walsh. It's usually either a feast or a famine when it comes to the announcements of new farm schemes, and this week can certainly be filed under feast. On Wednesday, Taoiseach Micheál Martin and Minister for Agriculture Charlie McConlogue launched their plan for the next Rural Development Programme funding for Ireland's farmers with a plethora of new schemes and updates. But Pat, they also announced some very, very big cap decisions which will affect farmers. Will you talk us through those first?
Sure. It came as a surprise. We weren't expecting announcements around the direct payments Pillar 1, which farmers will be very familiar with, 1.2 billion at the moment, and not changing very much in terms of the amount of money. Farmers would have got 70% of the 2021 payments in their accounts last Monday and are very glad of it. So in 2023, huge changes. We knew some of them, but some surprises. So I suppose the big ticket items, eco schemes, 25% as expected of the Pillar 1 funding, so about a little under 300 million a year. The eco schemes are being joined by CRIS, which is front loading. That is where money is taken away from the overall fund and from everyone's current payment and paid back out on the first X hectares. So what he's opted for is 10% CRIS, the maximum amount, which is a surprise. That's about 118 million euros a year. And that's going to be paid out on the first 30 hectares of every farm. Department modelling suggests that that will be about 44 euros per hectare, or a total maximum payment of 1,320 euros for farmers with 30 hectares or more. Young farmers are going to get 3%. Previously, the modelling had been on 2%. And what's left then will be known as the base. It's going to be about 40% or two-fifths lighter than the current basic payments. The CRIS will be added back in. The eco schemes will be added back in. But before that happens, they're going to take away 3% for the National Reserve. And they're also going to converge those payments. Convergence has been set at 85%. So higher payments are going to be cut more. And then the CRIS will be added back in, like I say, a maximum of 1,320, 44 euros per hectare. And finally, then eco schemes for all eligible land, whether you have entitlements or not. So a lot of the land that's now eligible, which would previously have been regarded as scrub, will receive eco scheme payments, even if it receives nothing else. And that will be paid out around 64 euros a hectare is what the department are predicting. So that's it. Quite complicated, but we can say farmers with larger holdings with higher payments will lose out significantly. And the department say that about three quarters of the 120,000 applicants will gain, but most of the people who gain will only gain slightly. And some of the people who will lose significantly.
If we can look at the CRIS for a minute, so this is the front loading scheme that we've been describing it as up until now. That is 10% off your total payment into CRIS. Yes. And then paid back at a fixed rate of, what did you say, 44 euro a hectare?
44 euros a hectare, yes.
This, because when you say he chose to go to the maximum, the minister chose to go to the maximum, there was a level of national decision there, wasn't there? What did Europe say that we could pick from?
Well, the understanding was 5 or 10%, but Europe, what we're being told now by the department is that Europe were insistent that there would be 10% redistribution from larger farmers to smaller farmers. They want two types of redistribution. They want higher payments reduced and lower payments brought up. That's convergence. But they also want redistribution from larger farmers to smaller farmers who are typically less economically viable. So that's what CRIS is about. They had 5 or 10%, but they also had the option, and they went for 10%, they also had the option of paying it out in the first 10, 20 or 30 hectares. And those people who represent smaller farmers may say that they would have preferred if it had been paid out on less than 30 hectares, which is the average farm size. So he had the option to have a higher payment. Say he could have doubled the payment and halved. So he could have gone for a high payment of 70 or 80 euros a hectare on 15 or even higher if he'd gone down to the first 10 hectares. But he chose not to do that. So that's what we've got. And the minister was very clear that he's thought about this, he's consulted, he's been around the country, and he has made his decision.
Perhaps is the reason why we know that there are some farmers planning to protest against the minister's decision today. I gather that is more focused on his cap decisions, is it, than the farm schemes, which we'll come to in a minute?
I think the divisive nature of the Pillar One schemes, where you take money away from one farmer to give to another with a static pool of money, the previous convergence, the coupling of payments in 2002, and now these reforms being brought about and the decisions the minister's making are incredibly divisive between farmers and between farmer organisations and within farmer organisations. And one of the reasons the minister's been able to be so decisive is because there's been a lack of clarity from the farmer organisations about what exactly they wanted. And that gave him a free hand to a large degree.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. But you say that the minister yesterday was very, very firm that he had his decision made on these parameters.
He really was. I think some people may have underestimated the minister, thought that because he's a nice man, that he's a soft touch. And I think he showed a bit of steel yesterday and he moved quickly. He's got everything out there now. There's going to be a massive row. You're right, there's protests in Tullow and Kilkenny today where the minister is on his round of MARC meetings. But I think his attitude is get it all out there, have the row, and we move on. And that strategy, let's see how it plays out. But that's definitely what's happening at the moment.
Because the deadline is, I think, 31st of December, is it, that this is the national plan that goes to Brussels for approval, for the stamp of approval from Brussels?
Correct. And of course, it seems, looking at it and looking at the demands that Brussels made, that Brussels won't have a big problem with the Pillar One elements because everything is well within the demands and ambitions that they had around redistribution. And I think for that reason, the Pillar One element of direct payments of the cap proposals should sail through.
Darren, that is, I suppose, the overarching stuff, but there were a lot of individual schemes announced yesterday. We actually debated what would be on the front page of the Farmers Journal today. We went with one that it's a type of scheme that has been sought in some quarters. To me, it looks like someone has tried to revive the old rep scheme. Is that too big of a leap?
No, Katina, I think you could describe it like that. And look at how many times do we report about Charlie McConnellogue being on the opposition bench and criticising the Dinn government for not having a rep scheme. So that is something that has been on his mandate for quite some time, and he's been determined to have a scheme, an agri-environment scheme or a flagship agri-environment scheme for quite a while. And we did see, I suppose, maybe his hands were tied around transitioning arrangements and he brought in a re-pilot. But this is the first, I suppose, what he described it as yesterday is the flagship environmental scheme for going forward. And there's quite a pot of money put aside for that. So there's total funding of $1.5 billion over the five-year period. $723 million of that is coming from the carbon tax. So I suppose there's $1.5 billion in carbon tax will be available over the next decade. That has been ring-fenced for agriculture. And we've seen this over half of that is going to go into the what will be known as the Agri-Environmental Climate Measure, or AECM. There is two different elements, or I suppose maybe two different entry routes into it. The department are targeting 50,000 farmers, but not the same 50,000 farmers. So if we look at, say, maybe the first entry route, it's around landscape measures, and it will be similar to, I suppose, the EIP projects. And there's many of them, there's 26 of them going at the moment. It's the likes of, say, the Suez project at Uplands in Wicklow, the McGillicuddy Reeks. There's a Bride project on dairy farming. There's various different ones. There's Hin Harriers, Pearl Mussel. All of them come under, say, this umbrella. And 20,000 participants is what's being targeted here. But these farmers will have to work together in these cohorts or in these collective groupings. And this is where the higher payment of 10,000 comes in. So there's a maximum payment under this section of 10,000. Charlene Conlogue said yesterday that he envisages the average for this section would be around 7,000 per applicant. And the second entry route in is on an individual basis. And that's looking at aspects to enhance the environment and enhance biodiversity. So someone will be applying on their own right. There's 30,000 places on that, maximum payment 7,000 and an average payment of 5,000 per applicant. And look, I think that has been broadly welcomed as one aspect it has, depending on what detail or what people are expected to do, because some of the REAP measures would be, I suppose, maybe viewed differently by different cohorts of farmers.
REAP being kind of the pilot project for this promised scheme. How does it compare to the likes of GLAS in terms of payments, first of all? Because, you know, cold hard cash, let's talk that first, and then because we don't really know the measures yet.
Yeah, so similar to GLAS in this, say GLAS would have been a maximum payment of 5,000 with a top up of 7,000. So straight away we can see the upper payments are ranged from 2,000 to 3,000 euros extra. So, but similar, say, participation rate, GLAS would be over 48,000 applicants. So targeting the same cohort of farmers, sorry, I won't say the same cohort, but the same number of farmers again. I think myself, Katrina, that you will have a big demand on this, because with 48,000 farmers in GLAS, we've seen over 10,000 farmers putting their name forward for REAP. So I think this could be potentially a scheme that could be oversubscribed from the get-go, depending on the a small print.
And did we get any hint yesterday? I know they were talking bigger brushstrokes yesterday, but will there be a competitive process to get into it if there is an oversubscription, or would the money be reduced to get more in?
I think there'll be selection criteria that all of the schemes that had came in off late or recently have had selection criteria targeted at them. Yes, some schemes have looked to say maybe a reduced payment around BDGP or the that sort, but the, in general, the agri-environmental schemes, even the soil sampling one, the selection criteria on that. So I imagine that will be the same. A lot of talk around tree planting and maybe fencing off areas for nature. It came up again yesterday on a number of times about multi-species swards, and which always beggars belief, because there's no, yes, there is some research there to show a boost in animal performance, but it's a new concept and there's a lot of weight being put on it. So I wouldn't be surprised if you're going to see something like that involved in it. One of the other interesting bits is that there's a lot of on safety or a team of safety going right through, and you'll probably look at every scheme will have some element of safety training or some element of safety measures. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's in the AECM as well.
I'm going to throw a question at you that I'm not sure we have the answer to yet, but will there be a requirement for an advisor, an agricultural consultant to be involved? Is there a danger that some money could be taken out of that 10,000 or 7,000 maximum, or the 5,000 and 7,000 measurements, to pay a consultant to help you with this?
I most certainly think there definitely will be an advisor, because I think that the fact that the REIT pilot is being launched has been, it's a blueprint for this, in regards of it won't be the department inspector coming out to inspect. It'll be results based, or that's what is, if the REIT pilot is seen to be working, it'll be, if you decide, if you take on five measures, Katrina, you will get paid on how good you do the measures. But it won't be the department coming out to inspect it. It'll be your own advisor that will be scoring you on them. And that has been clearly said in the REIT pilot and in the training that I set on myself, is this, it did very much the department told advisors, this is what you're going to be doing into the future.
Okay. Darren, I'll come back to you again because there's lots more schemes to talk about. But Siobhan, I'll come to you just on, for tillage farmers in particular, there was one or two schemes announced in the Rural Development Programme.
Yeah, so good news, the strong corporation is rolling over. So and the same budget, so 10 million, so 50 million over the 5 years. And the protein aid scheme, which is something that has been called for a long time by tillage groups, the IFA and the Irish Grain Growers have asked for the protein scheme to be expanded. So the protein budget has gone from 3 million to 7 million per year. And going on figures, that equates to about, you know, industry are aiming for a protein area of 20,000 hectares. So that would mean a payment of €350 a hectare if there was 20,000 hectares in the scheme. And I suppose we don't know what crops are in that scheme, so the budget is likely to have been increased to widen out the crops that are in it. So, you know, at the minute it's peas, beans and lupins. So, you know, there might be potential for edible protein for humans to be in there. We don't know if there's going to be forage crops in there like red clover, but certainly a positive to see both of those schemes extended. And I suppose one thing on the environmental scheme, tillage farmers hadn't access to the REAP scheme, which was the pilot environmental scheme.
That's right.
I'd hope that tillage farmers will be able to access that scheme like they were able to access LOSS in the past or REPS.
And was that mentioned yesterday at all, or is that still something that needs to be clarified by the department?
Clarification needed on that still. And look, there's plenty of measures there that work quite well in loss, like the arable margins and things like that, that would be really positive for the environment to implement on tillage farms.
I'm conscious that not all of our listeners are from one sector or another. Just explain the protein aid scheme to me. What is the farmer getting paid for in that circumstance?
So we have, I suppose, Europe has a plan to increase the amount of protein that we produce. So we import a lot of soy from South America, and we import protein from lots of different sources. And we don't, I suppose, protein in Ireland is a hard enough crop to grow. Beans and peas are kind of unreliable from season to season. The yield varies, and farmers really need to be supported in order to be encouraged to grow them. I suppose one thing is there needs to probably be more support for the processing end of things. So, you know, where farmers grow peas and beans, we need an end market for them as well. So some of the processors will probably need support to increase the amount of protein that they come in or that comes into them. But ultimately, the protein scheme is there to increase the amount of Irish protein that's in animals' diets,
to replace the imports. Darren, I'm going to come back to you because one of the other headline kind of schemes from the announcements was the new suckler scheme.
Yeah, and I suppose, Katrina, this is like for a lot of schemes, it's a new name, but they're replacing or they're regenerating an existing scheme that's there. So the Suckler Carbon Efficiency Programme has been given a fund of £260 million. That essentially is going to replace the Beef Data and Genomics Programme. But from what I understand is it's also going to take elements of the beef data, outside the beef environmental efficiency payment for sucklers, in that it's going to take the weighing element from that. And the reason for that is that there's a higher payment level and the department have to put in extra criteria. So you're going to have the same, say, targets around genotyping and selecting animals under replacement index, recording of survey information, production data, that type of thing, along with weighing, and along with every farmer will be obliged to do livestock handling training. The figures are being given, or that's being proposed, is €150 per cow on the first 10 cows in the herd and €120 thereafter. Now that would be an increase on the BDGP, which would be somewhere between 80 and 100 euros, depending on, say, the number of cows a farmer has. The one question mark that will probably be there, or we won't need to see further detail on, is how many cows it can take into it, because the rough figure I can see is around 400,000 cows. At the moment in BDGP, there's probably upwards of 500,000. So whether the department expect that they won't have as many applying for it, that's just a question mark that's there at the moment that we probably need to get a bit more clarity on going forward. But look, I suppose it gives some bit of clarity there for farmers that have left BDGP, or that have, say, they're going into their last year in the transitional arrangements around maintaining animals, or planning for what they're going to do with regard to suckler farming for the next few years.
And that scheme, Darren, we should say that the formal title, I think, is a suckler carbon efficiency scheme, is it? So what in the scheme is reducing the carbon output of the herd?
So the selecting animals and the replacement index is seen to breed more efficient cows that in turn will breed more efficient progeny. Excuse me. And say to do this, say the genotyping elements can identify that at a younger age and allow farmers to make better, say, breeding decisions. And ultimately, animals more efficient and being finished earlier is lower carbon.
Okay, very interesting. Pat, one of the other headlines was a very, very significant increase in a scheme that hasn't had a huge amount of funding up to date on the organic side.
Yeah, Pippa Hackett, I suppose, spoke at that. She's the minister with direct responsibility, Minister of State with direct responsibility for that area. A massive increase in funding, fivefold. Ambition to get up to 7.5% of Ireland's land base, which is over 300,000 hectares, into organic farming. At the moment, we only have a fraction of that. We've less than 80,000 hectares. So it would seem a very high level of ambition in such a short space of time, because transferring or transitioning into organic farming is a big decision, and there's a lead in time. But there's no doubt that the farm to fork strategy, which the CAP is based around at the EU level, is very insistent on an increase in organic farming levels. They want to see 25% of the landmass and farming in Europe organic. For tillage, it's problematic in Ireland, and you need a rotation, so you need tillage involved in most organic farms. One of the issues is our climate. While it's really good for growing crops and great yields, fungicides are an issue because you have to protect. Our damp climate means that fungal infections strike on crops. But there is very little doubt that that the department are keen on it, that the minister is keen on it, and the money is now there. The question will be whether farmers will bite.
Darren, it's been said before that, you know, some of the more extensive beef and sheep farmers use not, you know, a low level of inputs, that they would probably be some of the easiest people to switch over to organic, if easy is the right word to use. I'm not suggesting it's easy, but that they would be almost some of the low-hanging fruit to increase the organic output in Ireland. But yet I don't think that beef or lamb is needed on the organic market as much as some other.
No, like if we look at it at the moment, Katrina, the beef market is probably stable. We're probably meeting demand.
The organic beef market you're talking about, is it?
Yes, yeah. Organic beef market. I'd say probably the last figures I seen on the lamb side was probably about 50% was being sold conventional. So way over supplemented. And that was telling in the last, say, intake that the department were looking for. Beef and sheep farmers were at the bottom rung of the ladder in regards to selection criteria to horticulture, dairy and then tillage were the real ones they were after. So like, I think that it'll be continue to be the same. Maybe it'll change on tillage. We've seen Flavin's coming out and saying they had enough oats recently. But I think that the sheep and beef ones would be lower down the pecking order.
I gather the department have been quite tight-lipped, are they, on the type of farmer that was taken into the last organic scheme. We're trying for a couple of weeks at this stage to find out who got in, are we?
We definitely are, Katrina. I think that My own suspicions, and I could be wrong on this, is that they probably didn't get too many horticulture, dairy and tillage farmers into it, and that maybe that's why the figures are slow to come. And there's I suppose the bad aspect of that, from my point of view, is it put off a lot of beef and sheep farmers from applying, because they didn't think they'd have a chance at all of getting in. And it was undersubscribed. They were targeting somewhere between 400 and 500 farmers. They got 317. So I think for any future intake, they're going to have to be more clear around exact numbers, what systems, and entice more people to put in their application.
Yeah. Guys, there's a 3-page special, obviously, on the Rural Development Programme funding and those CAP decisions in the paper this week. We won't go through them all in the podcast, but they're there, pages 6 to 8 in the paper, and page 1, obviously.
There will be some modelling. We did some case studies and we made some assumptions. And now that the clearer picture has been made, we'll be updating those case studies and presenting how Minister McConnell Oak's decisions will affect their first pillar payments.
So these are the big CAP changes, Pat, the 85% convergence, 10% CRIS, and 25% eco schemes.
Correct. So from the weekend, we'll be putting them up on the website.
Great. Farmersjournal.ie, in case you don't know where it is. Siobhan, before we do wrap it up, you had a podcast, not a podcast, apologies, a webinar on Tuesday night with the World Wildlife Fund, Jason Clay. I've always associated the World Wildlife Fund with saving leopards, but it was far from leopards he was talking about on the webinar, more about Irish cows.
Yeah, Jason Clay was all for Irish cows and biodiversity and decreasing our greenhouse gas emissions. So Justin had him on around the editor's table, and it was quite refreshing to listen to someone. You know, he's someone who's extremely enthusiastic about reducing emissions and biodiversity, but he had loads of, you know, thought very positively of the Irish system and saw loads of opportunities. So, like, I suppose one thing we always hear about is, you know, that Irish farmers need to reduce the herd size. And, you know, Jason Clay's position on that was that the cows aren't the problem. It's the emissions and the slurry from the cows that are the problem. So rather than thinking of the numbers, think of how do we become more efficient? And he's very focused on, you know, improving breeding and, you know, just having a more efficient farming system. The things that we think of all the time, you know, increased things like increasing clover, improving your breeding in your animals, can all reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. And like his place on it was, if you give farmers a target, they'll just go to the target. Whereas if you ask them to reduce their emissions, there's going to be really innovative people out there who are going to, you know, not just reach a target, but go way beyond that target and find other ways of reducing emissions. One thing that he kept saying was that farmers need to have more diverse income streams. So we need to try and push to export carbon along with our milk and our beef and our lamb. That we need to, he talked about financial institutions are going to be looking for natural capital and are going to pay people for having habitats on their farms. And he really pushed anaerobic digestion as a solution as well, which is something that has been left behind in Ireland. And, you know, Justin writes on his editorial this week that, you know, it's in contrast to Eamon Ryan's position on anaerobic digestion. Jason Clay sees that as part of our solution, where we can have another income stream. We can have digesters in a community where there's, you know, there's a few farms contributing to the digester. There's food waste, there's garden waste going into that system, and there's energy being produced. So that's another way of reducing our emissions. So it's well worth a listen back. He was really positive and saw plenty of opportunities in Irish agriculture.
Thanks, Siobhan. Yeah, and that again is also available to watch back on farmersjournal.ie. When you mentioned anaerobic digestion there, Stephen Robb has the launch of a report on how the anaerobic digestion industry can develop sustainably. There has been some concerns, probably most among dairy farmers, that anaerobic digesters, if they're going to be fed with silage, could potentially become a rival, as it were, for land rental, which is a huge issue, certainly in the south of the country, the cost of land rental. Stephen has a report there that says that there is a sustainable way, that there is room for growth there on the grass output of a lot of Irish land. So that's in the paper this week as well. Guys, listen, thanks very much. We've covered an awful lot of topics there, touched on some of them. There's loads more information in the paper. And as Pat says, we will have more on that CAP modelling online over the weekend. So that's it for today. And thanks very much for your time.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.